So our first speaker is Scott Leitz. He's a state health economist from Minnesota. His main responsibility is quantitative and policy analysis related to Minnesota's healthcare market. He's responsible for providing analysis to the Minnesota legislature, state agencies, and other healthcare stakeholders on a variety of healthcare topics. He manages a $1.2 million annual budget, and he supervises 16 staff people, including 12 researchers who specialize in healthcare. He's currently the PI on a $2 million grant to study Minnesota's uninsured population. He serves on the Executive Committee of the National Academy for State Health Policy, and he chairs the Access for the Uninsured Committee. He's presented at the National Governors Association, at state legislatures in Colorado and Louisiana, at six annual meetings of the National Conference of State Legislatures, and at five recent conferences of the National Academy for State Health Policy. His master's degree is from the University of Minnesota, but his bachelor's degree is from our own University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. So Scott Leitz's topic today is healthcare cost growth, drivers and implications for states. Let's give him a warm Wisconsin welcome.
Well, thank you and good morning. My job today is really to set the stage for the talks that Paul and Francois will be giving. And what I'm going to cover is healthcare cost spending, sort of putting it in context. How fast are healthcare costs growing, both in the private sector side as well as in the Medicaid programs? What are some drivers of healthcare expenditure growth? I'll touch briefly on the role that states can and have played in healthcare cost containment, as well as some of the what the private marketplace is doing. And then, if time permits, I'll touch a little bit at the end on health savings accounts and some of the implications and roles for states, although I know Paul will be touching that on that primarily. I'll start with a little context on healthcare spending. One way to sort of think about how much gets spent on healthcare, either in a given state or nationally, is to think about it in levels. And that's what this diagram sort of does. If you sort of start at the top here and think about dollars spent on healthcare, that could be the $1.7 trillion the United States spends on healthcare in 2003. It could be the $30-plus billion a state like Wisconsin spends on healthcare. And you can break that down into who pays for those services: private health insurance coverage, out-of-pocket payments, government programs like Medicare and Medicaid, and what services are purchased: hospitalization, physicians, visits, prescription drugs, long-term care. You can then further break down what services are actually purchased on the next level down by looking at what causes changes in spending in those particular categories of services. Is it the price of hospitalization, for example? Is it the quantity of physician visits that we have? Or is it some change in the mix of services? Do we substitute certain drugs that become new to the marketplace for other drugs? And that can certainly tend to drive healthcare costs. And then finally, there's a number of factors on level four, things like market structure, technology, demographics, that affect the price of the healthcare that we consume and the quantity of the healthcare that we consume. And so there's really a couple points to make about this chart. One is that it's pretty easy to describe how much we spend on healthcare at the top. It's also fairly easy to describe who pays and what services are purchased. Once we get down here, it becomes much more difficult to be able to sort of track what those things are that are actually driving our healthcare costs. It also highlights the fact that there is no single silver bullet here. You're talking about a number of factors, many, many factors, that down here that really affect what goes on up here. And then finally, the final thing to note about this is that there's a number of factors down here that actually drive healthcare costs: lifestyle, genetics, technology, that to some degree are outside of the control of policymakers. They're things that are sort of external to that process, and really there aren't as many levers from a policy perspective to really address those. This chart simply shows nationally how much healthcare spending is as a portion of the gross domestic product. And really, the only point I want to make here is that clearly, as I think most of us know, healthcare spending as a portion of the economy has grown over the past 40 years as healthcare costs have outstripped growth in the economy. And really, what this represents is the fact that healthcare spending per se isn't bad or good. Growth in healthcare spending isn't bad or good per se. It merely represents a choice that we make with regards to the trade-off of resources that we have. So as the economy, as healthcare has grown as a share of the economy, That's not necessarily a bad thing. It merely represents a choice we've made as a society to use more of our resources towards healthcare and less for other things. And it's a similar thing you see in state budgets, where as Medicaid has grown faster than revenues have grown for states, states are having to make decisions about how the relative importance of the Medicaid program relative to other spending priorities. And this next slide zeroes in on just private health employer premiums. And I want to note a couple things about it. First, there was a period, focusing on the red line, if you would, for a moment. There's this period in the mid-1990s when healthcare premiums for employers were grew at a relatively slow rate. And growth in things such as workers' earnings, the blue line, or general inflation, the yellow line, actually grew at rates above how fast health insurance premiums for employers were growing. That started to change in the late 1990s and certainly has been the case throughout the 2000s. That health insurance premiums have grown at double-digit rates for the past 4 years and at rates that far outstrip growth in workers' earnings. The implication of that of this past four-year growth where premiums have grown at double digits relative to underlying things such as average worker wages is that even if employers are able to maintain the same premium contribution rates that they've had, and evidence suggests that they are, the fact that healthcare costs have so far outstripped the growth in an average worker's wage means that more and more of an average worker's paycheck goes to pay for health care, which raises issues of affordability and concern about the ability of people to be able to maintain their health insurance coverage. This chart merely, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one because this mainly illustrates the same thing, looking not at health insurance premiums, but rather health care costs as the underlying cost of care. And again, a similar picture. Private health spending, healthcare cost growth during the late 1990s was outstripped by the growth in the economy, and that picture has turned around in the 2000s. Let me talk just for a few minutes about the pressures that healthcare costs are placing on state budgets. Healthcare spending, sort of broadly defined, is about 30% of your average state's budget. It's going to vary state to state to some degree, depending on size of the Medicaid program, size of state employee groups, and so forth. But on average, about 30% of state budgets go for healthcare expenditures. Now, that the biggest driver, of course, of state budgets with regards to healthcare is the Medicaid program. About 70% of an average healthcare expenditures that are done by states are done for Medicaid, and that's primarily driven by the elderly and disabled populations that are on those programs. The state employee groups are second, but a very distant second at around 8% of health-related spending in a given state. And of course, what's gained a lot of attention in most states, like certainly, I would suggest probably here in Wisconsin, certainly in Minnesota, is the fact that Medicaid spending has been outstripping growth in state tax revenues. And that's really what this chart illustrates, which is Medicaid spending growth being the green line, the blue line being changes in state tax revenue. And you can see the disparity that exists in the latter part of the 90s and into 2000s, the gap here. So just as private health spending is outstripping growth in workers' wages, Medicaid spending is outstripping growth in state tax revenues, causing that same sort of trade-off issue that states face between what to do when you have shrinking state revenues and an expanding Medicaid budget. You can certainly bring in more revenue, you can decrease Medicaid spending, or you can make changes in other parts of the budgets to offset those. I think I'll actually skip this next slide. It's mainly another way of illustrating the same point about growth in Medicaid spending relative to growth in other state general fund activities. One of the reasons that Medicaid costs are as high as they are is because many of our very sick and high health need people end up in the Medicaid program. We have state Medicaid programs generally care for the disabled, for low-income elderly with high health needs. And so their costs by the nature of the people who are enrolled are relatively high, and that's why we have high costs in the Medicaid program. Those people are sort of out of the general health insurance pool, but even when we look at the general population, healthcare spending is very highly concentrated. Among your average group, about 1% of the population spends about, the most expensive 1% of the population in any given large group spends about 27% of the healthcare resources of that group. Similarly, about 10%, the sickest 10% spend about 70% of the healthcare resources. It's an important point in the sense that we know that health spending and who it is that actually drives health spending is actually a relatively small group of people. And this next chart shows a similar story, which is sort of the spread of health spending in a given year. And basically what it shows is that about a third of the population in any given year uses very few healthcare resources at all, below $200. About a third of the population spends somewhere between $200 and $1,000. And then about a third of the population spends somewhere between something above $1,000 annually on healthcare. Those would be their healthcare costs, their claims costs for the services that they receive. Let me talk for a few minutes about then what are some of the factors that are likely contributing to the increased healthcare cost growth that we're seeing. And I'm just going to sort of go through each of these real briefly and talk a little bit about them. The first one is technology and investment. Most health economists believe that at least half of the cost growth over the longer term that we've seen over the past 40 years is really due to technological advances. Things that are come out of the medical technology marketplace that replace older ways of delivering care, generally speaking, usually have the ability to deliver care more effectively, oftentimes more efficiently, but generally at a higher cost. And that represents one of the trade-offs that we have here, is that it has a higher cost, but you're getting perhaps more effective and efficient care in exchange for those for that higher technology. The other thing to think about here is investment, the fact that we have had rapid growth in investment in certain high-tech types of equipment. Imaging equipment has grown rapidly, construction of new inpatient facilities, for example, and potential duplication of services that might potentially drive cost. A second area is the issue of lifestyle and behavior. We know a lot about the statistics on smoking and alcohol consumption and its driver as a healthcare cost area, but the issue of obesity and physical inactivity, certainly recent studies have shown the increases in that have tended to drive healthcare cost increases as well. This chart actually, I didn't change the label on it. This is actually U.S. adults and U.S. kids. And what it shows is basically a doubling or a tripling in rates of obesity among our populations over the course of the past 10 years. The decline in the use of managed care and the consumer preferences for broad provider networks with relatively few access restrictions probably has had some impact on the rate of healthcare cost growth over the past 5 to 7 years. The mid-90s, when we had that real cost growth, the real slow cost growth, we had that was sort of the peak of managed care, if you will, when HMOs had relatively tight networks, were able to negotiate relatively low rates with providers. The well-known backlash against managed care in the latter part of the 1990s really probably had two effects. One is that it loosened provider networks so that it probably increased utilization because people had more direct access to specialists. Good from a consumer perspective, but probably drove some utilization increases. And then the increased ability of providers to negotiate somewhat higher rates. So there's probably a price and a quantity effect that occurred. The overuse, underuse, and misuse of healthcare services. Fairly well documented that there's fairly widespread variation in the quality of care that's delivered. Some examples of that I've listed here. Certainly, recent study by Elizabeth McGlynn at Rand Institute showed that about half of U.S. adults get recommended care. That's an example of some underuse. We know that Medicare spending in high spending areas of the nation spend as much as 60% more per person to deliver care that doesn't have better outcomes or better possibilities of survival, an example of potential overuse of care, and then the well-documented Institute of Medicine's work on medical errors and adverse health events, which is sort of the issue of the misuse of care and the fact that you're paying for care that doesn't have a beneficial effect. Market structure can also have an impact. Concentration and consolidation of providers that may occur. Concentration of insurers. I know Wisconsin is a unique state in the sense that you actually have a relatively non-concentrated insurer market here relative to most other states. But certainly the issue of consolidation of providers at the specialty levels can have an impact on what healthcare costs look like. Demographics I'll touch on real briefly here as well. We are aging as a population, and most people, I think, intuitively think because healthcare costs are increasing and we're aging that there's some connection between the two. And there probably is some connection, although it's relatively limited to date. What this chart shows is the growth in personal healthcare expenditures as a dark blue line, and then the lighter blue line is the portion of those expenditures that are due to aging. And you can see that the actual portion that's actually due to aging of the population is actually very, very small relative to the overall growth. So other factors are really swamping the aging to date. However, as the baby boomers move through the sort of wave of demography, Right now, they're sort of in the middle use years, 35 to 54, where this is hospitalization rates by age. And you can see as they will move sort of to that side of the chart, they're going to be moving into higher use areas. And so they're going to be using more healthcare services. So in the next 20 years, the next 30 years, as the baby boomers move through that, we are likely to see some increased utilization and likely some increased costs as a result of aging. Most of those costs will be borne by the Medicare program, but nevertheless, it will cause increases in healthcare costs brought more broadly. Let me touch for just a couple of minutes on then the sort of roles that states play relative to healthcare costs. And states do play a variety of roles, and really states are generally concerned about healthcare cost increases because we do play a variety of different roles in the healthcare market. States are purchasers of healthcare on behalf of low-income populations or Medicaid populations. States are employers that have state employees who access healthcare benefits. And then states play roles as sort of rule setters or regulators of the healthcare marketplace. Certainly our purchasing activities through the Medicaid program is an important role that states play. Tight economic times generally mean that you have some sort of counter-cyclical effect. Just at a time when state revenues are starting to decline because tax revenues are going down because of slow economic conditions, people are starting to lose jobs or have lower incomes, is generally when Medicaid enrollment starts to go up because more people are then qualified. And so states have that challenge, and they have concerns about maintaining access both for coverage and to low-income populations. States also play a role providing health benefits. We have an aging workforce. There's issues around employee retention that may potentially affect the ability of states to be creative on how we think about purchasing of health benefits. And then oftentimes states have a collectively bargained environment that they're operating in, which also may place some limitations on the ability of states as healthcare purchasers on behalf of their employees to be creative. And then finally, states are policymakers and regulators. And that's really the role that states play, is balancing that role of competition versus and market-based solutions to healthcare cost increases against more regulatory approaches. And there's a variety of different perspectives on what's the appropriate role for the state, what's the appropriate role for private government, or for the private market, rather. But there's always that pressure on state policymakers to be able to in some way respond to the pressure of healthcare cost increases that employers are facing and consumers are facing. And I think the last thing I'll sort of touch on here this morning is healthcare cost containment approaches that states and the private sector are examining. Let me just show you one slide real quickly. This is a slide from the Journal Health Affairs a couple of years ago. And the title of the slide was "The Sad History of Healthcare Cost Containment as Told in One Chart." Because what it shows is that we've had these periods of time when we've tried certain things, wage and price controls, managed care, and so forth, where we've had the temporary ability to sort of slow healthcare cost growth, but nothing that has managed to sort of retain itself over time, that nothing has sort of been the silver bullet to solve the problem. And in some ways, the issue of healthcare cost is really not all that complicated. It's really healthcare spending equals the price of healthcare that we consume times the quantity of healthcare that we consume. And so you can have approaches that either reduce or contain the price of healthcare, reduce or contain the quantity or use of services that we do, or as I think many healthcare purchasers, big healthcare purchasers are thinking these days, we can buy smarter by using the healthcare dollars that are being spent right now, but focusing those dollars on quality providers and on trying to buy value for the healthcare dollar that we spend. And certainly one can think about using market-based approaches to doing these types of things, or more regulatory approaches. Let me talk just for a second about price effects. Things that states are thinking about or private sectors are thinking about in terms of healthcare price. Thanks. Certainly, a number of states are examining things like mandate-free health insurance plans or limited benefit plans as a way to try to lower the actual price of the premium, making health insurance coverage more affordable for more people. The private sector is looking at things like, and some states are as well, the tiering of networks, that you're encouraged to go seek care as an enrollee in a health insurance plan through the cost-sharing arrangement that's built in. Lower cost to go to perhaps less expensive providers, higher cost to go to more expensive providers. Medical malpractice certainly gets a lot of attention in the marketplace as a way to essentially lower the price of, if you're able to reform the medical malpractice area, some argue that you can lower the price of the cost of services delivered at physicians' offices. And then there's more regulatory approaches that states such as Maine had looked at, which is limiting premium increases through either regulatory means or voluntary means. On the quantity side, things such as consumer-driven health plans and health savings accounts really try to build incentives into healthcare use for more efficient and wise use of services. And there are potential for savings for services funded out of health savings accounts, or if that account-based healthcare that we might now consume would somehow change how we view, broadly speaking, our access to healthcare services. Things such as changing benefit sets as well, such that we cover fewer things and encourage a greater involvement on the consumer part, and then approaches that control investment, like certificate of need approaches that try to control that investment in technology. And the last thing I'll touch on is just things that focus on value and quality. And again, I know Francois will talk a lot about this, so I won't spend a lot of time, but certainly things that are trying to approaches that both the private sector and the public sector are looking at that attempt to sort of hit some of those high cost cases through disease management or by trying to steer patients towards centers of excellence or best in class providers, but trying to steer patients towards those providers that have a proven track record at delivering quality care. I think I'll wrap up there and stop there and just basically sum up by saying, I mean, I think the main message here is that chart that showed sort of what the history of cost containment has been throughout time, and the fact that we've had these periods of time where you've been able to rein in healthcare costs for temporary periods of time, but not over the longer term. And the fact that that's driven by so many factors down at the lower end of that first chart that I showed you really makes it a complicated issue and a challenge. Thanks.
Stay here for a minute. Okay. We're going to take 5 minutes of questions from Mr. Leith.
Representative Marlon Schneider from Wisconsin Rapids. In your view, would the regulation of advertising by pharmaceutical companies and or the regulation of pharmaceutical companies providing largesse to physicians and sometimes entire clinics and hospitals have an impact on costs?
Thanks, Representative. I was hoping that we'd start with an easy one. Clearly, one of the fastest growing component of healthcare costs is the prescription drug sector. It's the one that's growing most rapidly. It's not the largest portion of healthcare spending because it started out relatively small and has been growing rapidly. There is certainly some evidence to suggest that the direct-to-consumer advertising that pharmaceutical companies have done has been fairly successful in driving both utilization of drugs and utilization of particular types of drugs, primarily branded drugs that are relatively new to the marketplace. Certainly that has been a driver. Whether regulation of that would have an impact, I think you can draw a conclusion as to if it's been a driver and you were able to regulate it, would there be some ability, would that to some degree rein in costs? It probably would to some degree. The degree to which it could do it entirely, I think, is another issue, however.
Okay, another question?
Representative Gary Sherman, Port Wing. Your chart on Medicaid growth is very dramatic. We're informed that two-thirds of Medicaid is long-term care. Now, you know, that's important, but only if it's consistent in all of your statistics. If all of the other statistics don't also include long-term care, then we're really dramatically comparing apples to oranges. I mean, if you take long-term care out of Medicaid, it's not that dramatic a factor in state spending, you know, and it's not related to overuse, misuse, underuse, you know, and it is demographically driven and all of those things. So I think it's important for us to understand whether all of those different charts are comparing the same things. Is long-term care generally included in all of that or only in Medicaid?
Yeah, thanks for the question and a chance to clarify. You're right that much of the growth in the Medicaid program is driven by those very high health need populations in the long-term care facilities, the disabled, the elder, low-income elderly who have high health needs. The charts that the sort of bullet points I talked about is some of the healthcare cost drivers really refer more to the private health insurance market. So things that we're seeing for what's driving employer-based coverage increases, for example. So you do have to be careful in comparing those two things, because really a lot of what I was referring to today talked more about what's going on in the private sector health insurance market. Probably less, although some of those same drivers exist for the Medicaid market as well, but really what I was referring to was probably more focused on the private health insurance market.
Question.
Mark Miller, Monona. We have a multitude of health insurers with a wide variety of policies and deductibles and so forth. Can you address what effect that might have on the cost of administering health care?
Sure. In general, the cost of administering health insurance coverage, and it's a topic of some debate as to what the right number is, but runs anywhere from, and it varies by size of employer group and so forth, but on the average will run anywhere from 8% to 15%, and it's average across, and that tends to be a standard, relatively average across most insurers. To the extent that cost is consistent as a percentage across insurers, it really shouldn't have a large global impact on overall healthcare spending, because that administrative cost needs to be incurred, whether it's one insurer or 15 insurers that are incurring the cost. And so to the extent that it's spread evenly across those insurers, it shouldn't have a large impact generally. I think the area that could be of concern is if there's reason to believe that you would get economies of scale, for example, by having fewer insurers operating in a marketplace where you could more centrally do some of those administrative cost things. I think we have, in Minnesota, for example, have three insurers that have about 80% of the marketplace. You have, I think, the top five insurers have about 40% of the marketplace here, and I don't see a lot of difference between the administrative cost structures that exist between Minnesota and Wisconsin, but certainly it's been an area of debate as to what is the right sort of approach in terms of a more consolidated market for administrative costs versus a market that is less concentrated, that where you might have that administrative cost spread across a variety of health plans.